Du lytter til EU-fori. En podcast om identitet, nationalisme og fællesskab i den europæiske union. Igennem 10 afsnit rejser vi rundt i Europa og undersøger medlemslandenes indgang til det fælles europæiske projekt. Vi skal tale med filosofer, økonomer, politiske tænkere, journalister og folk på gaden. Vi undersøger de konsekvenser, medlemskabet har for de enkelte lande. Hvad er konflikterne, og hvad er fordelene? Det ser vi på i et kulturelt, historisk, politisk og mellemmenneskeligt perspektiv. Dine værter er Mette Juel Jessen og Sebastian Lundqvist. Denne podcast er støttet af Europanævnet. A free and united Europe is the necessary premise to the strengthening of modern civilization. Disse ord stammer fra Ventotene-manifestet fra starten af 1940'erne, skrevet af italienerne Altiero Spinelli og Ernesto Rossi.
Og manifestet her har været en fundamental del af skabelsen af den europæiske union.
Med de store tanker om et samlet Europa rejser vi til det moderne Italien og ser på, hvordan den generelle holdning til EU er i dag. Hvilke EU-fordele tages for givet, og hvordan får man skabt en større interesse for EU blandt borgerne?
Til at besvare disse spørgsmål satte vi den politiske pendler Gianluca Squeo stævne i NYU's lokaler i Firenze.
My name is Gianluca Squeo. I actually am a commuter. I will define myself as a commuter. I combine some skills in the academia as a professor, or if you prefer, a researcher, and some other skills in the institutional world as a policy analyst. I teach here media, activism, and democracy. That's the class that I teach at NYU Florence. Since 2014, I am working as policy analyst for the European Parliament. The European Parliament established in 2013 a research service, which is politically neutral, and it's supposed to provide both to the members of the Parliament and the general public information about the activity. So I work both for MEPs, they ask me for information, analysis on certain topics, and for publishing documents, briefings that everybody could read.
Inden vi dykker ned i støvlelandets forhold til EU, skal vi lige have et par fakta på plads.
Med et befolkningstal på omkring 61 millioner er Italien også det fjerde mest befolkede EU-land og har 73 medlemmer i Europaparlamentet. Den 2. juni 1946 blev Italien efter en folkeafstemning en republik, og denne dag bliver fejret som republikkens dag. Det er også denne særlige dato, hvor de italienske kvinder fik stemmeret. I 1949 blev Italien medlem af NATO. Vi har i århundreder været underkuet og forhånet, fordi vi ikke er et samlet folk. Fordi vi er opdelt. Lad et flag, et håb samle os alle. Timen er kommet, hvor vi skal stå sammen. Sådan lyder det blandt andet i Italiens nationalsang Fratelli d'Italia.
Det moderne Italien blev først forenet i 1861 og er derfor en relativt ung nationalstat, når man sammenligner med andre europæiske lande.
Men hvad har 156 år som forenet nation betydet for Italiens demokrati i dag? Det har Squeo et svar på.
You know, Italy compared with other European countries, it's a relatively young democracy. We celebrated 150 years of the Italy as a unified country 5 years ago, which compared with other countries, it's not much. So Italy is a country made of a lot of individuality at the local level, which explains why it is, on a certain topic, a weak democracy, and also explains why we've been facing populist parties, populist political offers, since quite a while. Well, nowadays, the populism is the word of the day, no? So, and we have our share of populism. But I remember already 10 years ago, 15 years ago, when populism wasn't that overspread, we already had the Lega Nord, which still exists, and the main idea was, let's separate North, the productive part, from South, that according to that narration was the lazy part.
Der er altså en meget stærk selvstændighedsfølelse i flere af Italiens regioner.
Den her stigende regionale selvstændighedsfølelse har ifølge Squeo været et bidrag til opblomstringen af nye populistiske partier. Eksempelvis femstjernebevægelsen med Beppe Grillo i spidsen.
Ønsket om selvstændighed ses tydeligt i det nordlige Italien, men fornemmes også på de italienske øer, der altså ikke er landfast med resten af Italien og regeringen i Rom.
You know that we face strong independent movements. You know what happened in Catalonia just a few weeks ago. And as soon as this happened in Catalonia, in Sardinia, the island, where there is a strong independent movement, someone said we should go exactly for the same thing. Then we have in Sicily a very also strong territorial approach. And as I mentioned before, the north has always been a little bit unsympathetic with the rest of Italy, from Rome to the rest of the south part of the country. So it is a challenge to get a functional democracy. I think this is the main challenge. And it is also probably one of the reasons that is giving fuel to the populist movements. In this very moment, I'm not thinking much at the Five Stars, which are probably the most important populist movement, but I'm thinking about the Lega Nord, North League, which is growing up very quickly in polls. They're going to be a strong ally of the right-wing parties, Berlusconi, and they have changed a little bit the focus from going against the South to going against European Union. But still, this is a sign to me of the fact that we are not as mature as a democracy as other countries. And this will take time, probably a couple of generations more, to digest these diversities and make it in a sensation of being part of just a country.
For Italien er der to fællesskaber, der skal balanceres. Dels det nationale, men også det europæiske.
Og hvis dele af den italienske befolkning ser sig adskilt fra en fælles italiensk national identitet, hvordan ser det så egentlig ud i forhold til den europæiske ditto?
It's difficult to find a general mood. I think you have to observe the generations and the social levels. So, let's exclude the hyper-educated people. These are usually pro-European. The problem is that as soon as you go under the middle class, or even in the middle class, the mood is generally not positive. And the reason is that, unfortunately, Italy has suffered the effect of crisis since 2008 heavily. We are still struggling to recover. We are slightly recovering, but still struggling. People do not find a job. And who's to blame? The EU. But again, and I want to stress this point, this is because of what the political class has told to people. Every time we have an issue, implicitly or explicitly, the EU is narrated as the final source of our problems. Let me give an example. Matteo Renzi, the former prime minister, has been conducting a battle against the EU to get more flexibility on the limit that we have on our public deficit. You know that the EU asks us, to everybody, to stay within a certain limit. And he is one of the countries that is asking more flexibility. He's been pro-European since they first in office, defending Europe, doing like promoting the European Union. The very moment in which he was in a fight with the European Union because he was perceiving that there was no space to getting this flexibility, he used to have a speech every week on TV and social network, which was Matteo Risponde, Matteo Answers. You could send him questions through the internet and he would answer. And it was a streaming, it was web streamed. As a prime minister, you know, on his back, he will have the EU flag and Italian flag. Well, that is very famous because actually, on that, the day after this problem he had in Brussels, on the Matteo Risponde, there were only Italian flags behind him. In fact, many people online started to share the hashtag Dov'è la bandiera, where is the flag, to mention. So now that you are having troubles with your political debate with you, now you are putting as a sign just Italian flag. So you're becoming nationalist. You see what I mean when I say the political class? Exactly. So that is what makes the general mood a little bit more critical. I'm more worried from that poll that you mentioned. I'm more worried about the people that are against the EU. Because those are overspread among ages, and also the more you go, of people that are not well educated, the more you will find critical approaches to what the EU is and how the EU should work.
Det er svært at finde en helt generel holdning til EU-medlemskabet. De forskellige holdninger ses ikke kun mellem forskellige samfundsklasser, men også fordelt på de forskellige generationer.
Squeo forklarer her, hvordan generation spiller ind i italienernes holdning til EU.
If I have a young daughter, okay, very young, she's less than 1 year, and but she's already when she see a mobile phone or a tablet, she already learned that she has to move the finger on it. So I'm giving you this example because she will probably be in a generation that having touch screens will be normal, will be the rule. And I wasn't in this. So my European Union was built step by step through concrete benefits. From today on, we will have a unified currency. You could travel to France and then move to Spain and then make a turn to Belgium and having in your pocket the same money. If I was born with having this already, I'm not saying that I wouldn't appreciate it, I just will say that I will take it for granted. Therefore, I will be more critical towards the EU because I will not recognize the fights that the EU did to give us these rights. And I really think it's a matter of, I just don't want to describe it in terms of younger and older generations. But I do think that most of the young generations completely ignore the benefits that they are having because of the EU. And this is a big issue. So your question should be answered, it depends to whom you ask. If you ask me, I will be happy to say that the EU gave me a lot of benefits. But if you ask to someone that has 20, 18, they will probably tell you, I don't know, I don't care, I don't see any benefit. Actually, my parents tell me that the crisis, the euro, so they will have a very confused understanding. And that's dangerous because they are the future generation. So my question then is, where is the school? Because it should be the school, the educational system, to teach them the value. And in this, Italy has failed thus far.
Den yngre generation har det altså med at tage nogle af fordelene ved EU for givet.
For Squeos generation er billedet et andet. Squeo har tydeligt mindet om en tid før Schengen og valutaskiftet til euro, hvilket bare er nogle af de mærkbare fordele, EU-medlemskabet har ført med sig for den enkelte italienske borger.
I am of a generation of people who felt on their skin the benefits of the European Union. I have memories of traveling abroad and having in my pocket, my mother gave me like a small bag to put the money that I had to change. So I remember I did the Interrail experience, and that was amazing. But I remember I did France, Belgium, Spain, and Holland, and I had to change money all the time. So this is the first thing. Second, I remember living in a time in which Schengen was not still part of the European Union backbone. So I remember going through checks when traveling, not just when I flew from some place to another, but also when I was in a car. So, to answer your question, I think there is a clear distinction between two different ages in our population. People that are older than 35, like me, that have a clear understanding of European Union as something beneficial. And when I mean beneficial, I am really concrete. As I mentioned, the euro and the right to travel. Or also, I'm a professional in Belgium because the right to work in another country. And then there are the younger generations. They were born and they grew up with these benefits already there. For them, the European Union, the perception of the European Union is something much more complicated. So they do not see the benefits that they are getting from the EU. And it's, I think, how Italy now perceives the EU. On the one hand, you have people, not necessarily educated, who recognize to the EU the efforts that have been made in making us feeling Europeans. And on the other hand, you have those people that, for a number of reasons, including the fact that they give for granted the EU rights, that tend to neglect the benefits of being part of the European Union.
Så der er et problem i det italienske uddannelsessystem.
At uddanne unge til at kunne gennemskue og navigere i EU er en værdi, der helt bliver overset, men en vigtig pointe, hvis de unge skal kunne tage del i projektet.
Og at borgerne, unge som gamle, tager del er både en udfordring og en nødvendighed for den europæiske union ifølge Squao.
I think the main challenge of the EU is to make itself clear to countries. So, if you want, the problem that I mentioned about Italy are pretty common in many other countries, from France, Spain, Belgium itself. So, I like to see the European Union more entrepreneurial in communicating the message of the EU to the citizens. And well, if you see, there's been a lot of attempts since the Treaty of Lisbon, for example, the European Citizens Initiative. The European Citizens Initiative, it's a tool that is given in the hands of citizens, European citizens, to ask the Commission to decide about certain topics. Now, amazing, no? And what is the message behind it? The message is, hey, you are a citizen, you can come directly to me, you don't have to go through your government. It's powerful. Then, what's the problem? The problem is that, I'm not going into details, it's going to be too boring, but you need millions of signatures from five different countries with a lot of bureaucratic limitations. And eventually, if you can make it, the Commission can conclude by saying, sorry, this is not in our agenda. Okay, so that's the problem. You see, you created a tool exactly for the will to give citizens the idea, the idea that they could take part in shaping policies at the EU level. And then what are you doing? You are putting a lot of constraints in order that they will think this is too difficult. So the main challenge is getting citizens closer in an easy and simple way. It's not an easy task, but it's a task that starts with communication. It starts by going directly to citizens, being clear, being transparent. That is what will probably help citizens to feel empowered and to feel that they have a position in the EU that is not just what is narrated by national politicians, but is actually directly linked with what happens in Brussels.
EU har altså et kommunikationsproblem, og får ifølge Squeo ikke kommunikeret den europæiske idé til borgerne.
EU har skabt en forventning om, at man som borger kan være med til at forme unionen. Og når den forventning så skuffes af et tungt bureaukrati, så står man tilbage med frustrerede borgere.
Men hvordan opnår EU at nå ud til dem, der ikke selv søger information? Til dette har Squeo to forslag, han kalder henholdsvis participatory budgeting og gamification.
Squeo lægger ud med at beskrive konceptet participatory budgeting og forklarer, hvordan det kan fungere i virkelighedens verden. Det gør han med et eksempel fra den spanske hovedstad Madrid, hvor borgerne får lov til at have direkte indflydelse på en lille del af budgettet.
So participatory budgeting, it is basically the decision of a public administration to make the allocation of resources participated. Let me give you an example. In Madrid, there is a web platform which is called Decide Madrid, where citizens on certain aspects of the budget can vote and can decide, okay, we have 1,000 euros. And we want to give this 1,000 euros to public education rather than public transportation. Why it's powerful? Because if you think about it, the real core of politics is how are you dealing with resources? How honestly, how efficiently are you using the money? If I give you citizens the chance to actually tell me where you want to put the money, that will be the most democratic decision ever, no? You have decided, so at least you can complain that I used the money for something that was wrong, because it was us deciding democratically altogether. This is participatory budgeting. In Italy, it's happening quite a lot at the very local level. It's in the program of the Five Stars movement, even if they didn't apply much where they govern. It's not at the national level. And unfortunately, it's not at the EU level. There is nothing participated in the budgeting of the EU. So that could be a nice approach.
Og så er der Squeos store passion for tiden. Gamification. Her skal vi en tur til London for at forstå konceptet bedre. I London har man nemlig løst et problem med tyggegummi på fortovene på en lidt alternativ og legende facon.
For når det kommer til gamification, så er det leg og kreativitet, der er i fokus.
Gamification. Gamification is my current topic of analysis, so I'm really passionate about it. What is gamification? Gamification is when you basically try to engage citizens through something that looks like a game, but is actually not. Example. The municipality of London, a few years ago, they had an issue with people throwing chewing gums outside of the metro station, the subway station. So what did they do? They put, I remember it because I saw it and I was in London, I was so shocked in a positive way. They put this like poster with pictures of local politicians saying, put your chewing gum on the face, on the one that you dislike the most. And of course, this is fun, right? No, so you are eating a chewing gum, you're going to throw it out. Yeah, I mean, rather than throwing it out, you put it there. But actually, you are helping the municipality to have a cleaner environment. And there's plenty of these examples. In this case, well, Italy, not that much, I would say. But the European Union is performing pretty well on this. There is a web page on the Commission website in which you have a lot of small games or educational games where especially younger people can learn about the EU through playing. For example, the European Central Bank, one of the main institutions, they have a game called Economia that is supposed to teach you about the inflation rate, how it works, but it is done through a game. So you kind of play, or you kind of have this playful experience, but at the end you have learned one of the main tasks of the European Central Bank. It's very promising, it's very innovative, I have to think, I have to say that we are far away from this being implemented all around the EU or national policies. It is a promise. I hope it will develop more, because it's really promising in terms of options. What's the risk? The risk is that thus far it is very difficult to find a kind of gamification experience that could last in the positive effects for a long time. The example that I gave you before about the chewing gum. After a while, the second time you will still put the chewing gum. The third time you will probably throw it on the floor, because the playful experience is over. So the real challenge for the legislators who are trying to use this gamification is to make it durable over time. And this, we are not really close to that point. So there's still some time to... We'll see what happens.
Problemet med gamification er, at effekten ikke er så langtidsvarende. Den udfordring er ikke helt blevet løst endnu.
Og med det tilbage til det store EU-perspektiv. Her mener Skrive, at borgerinddragelse er central, uanset om det er i form af participatory budgeting, gamification eller noget helt tredje.
Med et EU, der er vokset i højt tempo, skal borgerne inkluderes, hvis projektet skal blive en succes. Borgerne er nemlig med til at udgøre den stabilitet, som EU ifølge Skrive gerne skulle have.
I think that the EU has gone through this process of enlargement that is now over. For the last 20 years, the main issue of the EU was to grow up, to get more countries as members. That process is over. Now the role of the EU is to stabilize. So, ideally, I see a EU who is more present in the lives. I would see my daughter. She's now, as I told you, 9 months old. I like to think that when she's 14, 15, so in like 15 years, she will have a clear idea of the presence and the benefits of the EU. Is this going to happen? I am still a little bit skeptical. So this, what I just told you, is my hope. What I think is that the EU is at a crossroad. If the Brexit crisis and also the populist crisis will not be handled, we could also face the opposite. We could face coming back of nationalism, which will definitely impact on us all in a negative way. So I will still stick to the positive opinion. I don't want to be impolite, but I have difficulties in thinking in Italy outside of this project. Geographically, culturally, and even for the society, we are at the heart of Europe. Indeed, there are many differences from other countries, but Italy couldn't be out of the EU project. It's really like impossible for me to conceive it. And so, no, to be honest, I've never thought to have Italy outside of European Union. And I actually don't like to think about other countries being out. Well, we have the example of the UK, but think about Greece. That will be a big failure for the EU, and I don't think that any country in the EU area would perform better being out rather than being inside the EU.
Og med det takker vi af fra Italien.
Tak til Gianluca Squarely.
Du har lyttet til EU-fori, en podcast om identitet, nationalisme og fællesskab i den europæiske union. Podcasten er produceret af Netudgaven og støttet af Europanævnet. Musik er H.C. Skibelund. Tak fordi du lyttede med.